Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson, and produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. Many thanks, by the way, to everyone who sent their congratulations on WRMI's 30th anniversary, which we talked about in our last program. This is edition NWS 800 of WaveScan for release on Sunday, June 23rd, 2024. On the program today, the Hollywood actress with a patent for countering radio jamming, news about the 2024 European DX Council Conference in Estonia, and a rare visit to the Armenian Shortwave and Mediumwave Radio Relay Center. Fans of classic film know the name Hedy Lamarr for her memorable performances in Algiers, H.M. Polam Esquire, and Ziegfeld Girl, among others. But the actress also made a small contribution to wartime technology with her co-invention of an early form of spread-spectrum communication technology, in which a noise-like signal is transmitted on a much larger bandwidth than the frequency of the original information. It is a staple today in modern wireless communications. Ray Robinson at the Voice of Hope in Los Angeles has more on this story.
Thanks, Jeff. Born in November 1914 as Hedwig Eva Maria Kiesler in Vienna, Austria, Lamarr studied ballet and piano as a child and attended a famed acting school in Berlin, headed by director Max Reinhardt. She dropped out of school to be Reinhardt's production assistant and had bit parts in two films before starring in a Czech film called Ecstasy, shocking for the era because Lamarr appeared nude on screen. Lamarr leveraged her beauty and notoriety into marriage just before she turned 20 to a man 30 years her senior, Friedrich Mandl, an arms merchant based in Vienna who sold munitions and manufactured military aircraft. Mandl forbade her to continue acting. Instead, Lamarr presided over her husband's lavish parties, attended by Hitler and Mussolini, among others, and was often present at his business meetings. As a result, despite her lack of formal education, Lamarr acquired a great deal of knowledge about military technology, most notably guided torpedoes and the vulnerability of radio-controlled weapons to jamming and interference. Disillusioned with married life, especially her husband's controlling behavior and dealings with Nazi industrialists, Lamarr disguised herself as one of her maids and escaped to Paris in 1937, where she obtained a divorce from Mandl. And interestingly, she would marry five more times before giving up on the institution. After she met Louis B. Mayer in London, he signed her to MGM as Hedy Lamarr. In a town filled with stunning women, Lamarr stood out. Actor George Sanders once said that she was so beautiful that everybody would stop talking when she came into the room. But Lamarr was more than just a pretty face. She had a natural mathematical ability and lifelong love of tinkering with ideas for inventions. One of those ideas bore fruit when she met her Hollywood neighbour, avant-garde composer George Antheil, in the summer of 1940. Born in New Jersey to Prussian emigrants, Antheil studied music in Philadelphia and toured Europe as a concert pianist before turning his hand to composing. His signature piece was called Ballet Mécanique, a complicated score originally written for Fernand Léger's 1924 abstract film of the same name. It called for mechanically synchronized 16-player pianos, as well as xylophones and percussion. He returned to the United States in 1933 to compose for film, and also became a syndicated advice columnist and author of a book about romance and endocrinology. Legend has it that Lamarr approached him for endocrinological advice, but the two soon began chatting about weapons, particularly radio-controlled torpedoes, and how to protect them from jamming or interference. She realized that we're talking and changing frequencies all the time, and that a constantly changing frequency is much harder to jam. This became the basis for their design for a torpedo guidance system. Lamarr contributed the idea of frequency hopping, while Antheil drew on his experience with ballet mécanique and the 16-player pianos to devise a means of synchronizing the rapidly changing radio frequencies envisioned by Lamarr. Their joint invention used a mechanism similar to piano player rolls to synchronize the changes between the 88 frequencies, not coincidentally also the standard number of keys on a piano, and called for a high-altitude observation plane to steer a radio-controlled torpedo from above. They submitted their patent on June 10, 1941, 83 years ago this month, and the patent was granted on August 11, 1942. Lamarr was listed on the patent as Hedy Kiesler Markey, her married name at the time. It was not an entirely new concept. Nikola Tesla alluded to frequency hopping in 1900 and 1903 patents. A similar patent for a secrecy communications system was granted in 1920, with additional patents granted in 1939 and 1940 to two German engineers. And evidence came to light in the 1980s that during World War II, the US Army Signal Corps worked on a communication system that used the spread spectrum concept as well. Lamarr and Antheil had less success convincing others their idea was feasible. The US Navy felt the clockwork mechanism was too bulky and unreliable to use with a torpedo. It wasn't until 1957 that engineers at Sylvania Electronic Systems Division adopted the concept, using the recently invented transistor for an electronic system. Antheil died in 1959. As for Lamarr, she went on to make more than 20 more films, most famously Cecil B. DeMille's 1949 Samson and Delilah. Lamarr has a star on Hollywood's Walk of Fame in honor of her film career, but she took particular satisfaction in being awarded the Electronic Frontier Foundation Award in 1998, more than 50 years after she and Antheil received their patent. Lamarr died on January 19, 2000, in her Florida home. She will likely always be remembered more for her spectacular beauty than for her technological contributions, which are usually treated as an intriguing footnote. "My face has been my misfortune," she once observed, describing it as "a mask I cannot remove. I must live with it. I curse it." So, next time you have an opportunity to watch one of Hedy Lamarr's classic movies, remember there was a lot more to that lady than just her pretty face. Thanks to the American Physical Society for publishing this item. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray will begin a short series looking at the early history of Radio Luxembourg in Europe. Last week, we told you about some of the upcoming shortwave DX meetings in the Western Hemisphere. Today, we have details about a very important DX meeting that will be taking place in Europe in September. Our friend Risto Vahakainu of the Finnish DX Association sends us the following information and invitation to all shortwave listeners and broadcasters. Risto says, "Welcome to the EDXC Conference 2024 in Tartu, Estonia. The European DX Council, or EDXC, is the umbrella organization of European DX clubs. It arranges annually an international conference for international radio stations, DX clubs, and individual DXers. In 2024, the conference will be held on the 20th to the 23rd of September in the city of Tartu, Estonia. Tartu is one of the cultural capitals of Europe this year. Shortwave listeners, DXers, and international radio stations are invited to join the EDXC Conference 2024. Complete information about the conference is available at edxc.org. That's edxc.org. There's a link there to the conference website. Representatives of radio stations will be assisted by the organizers. Presentations and the conference agenda, as well as possibilities for interviews, will be arranged for the broadcasters. Tartu is the second largest city of Estonia. It's located in the southeastern part of the country, about 185 kilometers from Tallinn. This cozy town has about 100,000 inhabitants, but it's still small enough that many of the targets can be reached by walking. We can see two parts, the historical area and the business area. The center of the city is the Town Hall Square, Reikoja Plats. The University of Tartu is the oldest and the biggest in Estonia. Its main building is located in the historical area. The EDXC conference will include a walking tour in Tartu on Saturday, and during that, most important sites of the center will be seen. Tartu has several interesting museums. For those who want to take a closer look, we recommend an extra day in Tartu. But during the conference, it's also possible to visit briefly one or two of the smaller museums. More tourist information can be found at visit.tartu, T-A-R-T-U. Here are a few of the tourist attractions in town. The Estonian National Museum is located about 2 kilometers from the city center. This fairly new museum is huge. We recommend you reserve several hours to visit. Then there's a small but impressive KGB museum on Ria Highway, not far from the center. Tartu Toy Museum is a specialty museum in the historical center. The Estonian Sport and Olympic Museum is also located in the historical center. The Tartu University Museum is on Tumpea Hill in the old cathedral. The Tartu University Astronomy Tower is at Tumpea Hill and gives you a beautiful view over the city and its premises. A science center is right behind the conference hotel. St. Paul's Church of Tartu was designed by Finnish architect Eliel Saarinen. It's located at Ria Highway near the railway station. The Tartu University Botanical Gardens are in the center. Now, how to get to Tartu? Well, first of all, the EDXC is offering a reasonably priced bus ride from Tallinn on Friday, the 20th of September at 12:30 hours. The bus will take us first to Turi in central Estonia, where we'll visit the Estonian Broadcasting Museum. A small lunch break in Turi will also be made. We hope that many of you will be able to join this ride. From Helsinki, Finnair serves Tartu with 2 daily connections. A bit more expensive, but a quick and easy way to get there. Tartu Airport is located about 11 kilometers south of the city. A taxi to the city center should be a maximum of 15 euros. Currently, no other flights to the Tartu Airport are available. There was some news regarding problems at Tartu Airport in April and May, but we're happy to say that the airport should by now be updated with new equipment. Bus connections from the Tallinn bus station run at least hourly throughout the day. The conference hotel is located right at the Tartu bus station. Bus connections between Tartu and Riga, Latvia, are also available 4 times daily. The train connection from Tallinn doesn't differ much from the bus connection, but there are not many connections daily. The train station in Tartu is located somewhat further, about 1.5 kilometers from the conference hotel. For accommodation, the conference hotel in Tartu is called the Hotel Tartu. It's an elderly hotel with basic services. A new part was built recently with good conference and sauna facilities and some new rooms. We recommend staying here because attending the conference is therefore flexible. Now the agenda for the EDXC conference. On Friday, the 20th of September, a group transport from Tallinn will leave the D-terminal at 12:30 and pick up passengers at Ülemiste bus stop at the airport. This transport will also visit the Estonian Broadcasting Museum in Turi in central Estonia, and it should arrive at the conference hotel in Tartu at 1800 hours. The following agenda is preliminary and subject to changes. Note that there is space for more presentations. This is Friday, the 20th of September. At 1830 hours is the conference opening. At 1930, there will be a panel discussion about the history of the European DX Council. And at 2030, notes on DX and shortwave meetings around the world by Risto Vahakainu. Then on Saturday, the 21st of September, a big day, at 0800, there's breakfast. At 0930, a presentation about Tartu by the Tartu 2024 office. Then at 1000 hours, the FMDX season for 2024 by Jukka Kotovirta. At 11:45, a walking tour in Tartu, divided into two groups, one in English and one in Finnish. At 1300 hours, lunch at the Gunpowder Cellar. And then 1400, Finnish shortwave radio today, Scandinavian weekend radio, and Real Mix Radio. At 1500 hours, De-Expeditions to Lapland, presentation of the Aikiniemi site by Jim Sulati. At 1600, a coffee break, followed at 1630 by an update on the Medium Wave Masts project by Dan Goldfarb. At 1715, a presentation by David Mauby, featuring his life on radio, starting during the 1960s in London and ending up in Turku, Finland. You may remember hearing David Mauby on Radio Finland, back when it still existed. And finally, on Saturday, the 21st of September, at 1930 hours, the EDXC banquet at the hotel restaurant. On Sunday, the 22nd of September, 0800 is breakfast. At 1000, a panel discussion on the present and future of DXing in Europe. And at 11:45, the official closing of the conference. But at 1300 hours, there's a bus trip to Valga, a town in southern Estonia. And at 20:30 in the evening, a return to the hotel. Finally, on Monday, the 23rd of September, a breakfast at 0800, no official agenda that day, and a return to Tallinn. There are conference packages available. There's a full conference package, which includes 3 nights in a superior double room at the Hotel Tartu, including breakfasts. It includes also the bus from Tallinn, including the Estonian Broadcasting Museum in Turi. It includes lunch on Saturday and the EDXC banquet, as well as the excursion to Valga. All that for 250 euros per person. And the same package is available in a superior single room for one person at 345 euros per person. Registrations and all inquiries are welcome, and they'll be handled by the main organizer of the conference, Mr. Risto Vahakainu, who we have known for many years. We've attended many EDXC conferences in the past, and they're always most enjoyable. The European DX Council hopes to see many of you in September in Tartu. Remember, more information at edxc.org. Andrei Molokov, who produces the Voice of Russia DX program in Russian, broadcast on WRMI, was able to visit recently a major shortwave relay site built during the Soviet period in Armenia, which is now an independent country. The following is his report from Armenia. Naratus, an ancient Armenian village with a centuries-old history. However, tourists who have been in abundance here lately do not realize that in addition to the famous Kachkars, Armenian architectural monuments and shrines, which are carved stone stelae with the image of a cross, the village has a legendary landmark, one of the largest operating radio centers of powerful radio broadcasting in the vastness of the former USSR. October 18, 1965 was the first on-air date for the radio center in the village of Naratus. It was on that day that the transmitters went on the air for the first time. Construction work continued until 1974. By 1990, the radio center had a rich infrastructure for powerful radio broadcasting in the range of long, medium, and short waves. After the collapse of the USSR, the radio center retained its equipment and continues to fulfill orders for rebroadcasting programs on medium and shortwave. In recent decades, the volume of broadcast orders has dropped significantly. However, the management of the radio center fundamentally preserves the entire unique broadcast complex, rejecting any proposals for dismantling it. Now, what's the radio station like today? There are 3 transmitter buildings, antenna fields, and an administration building and related buildings. The total area of the broadcasting facility is more than 700 hectares. Let's take a virtual tour of each of the broadcasting buildings. Building number one. Shortwave transmitters with a power of 1,000 kilowatts are located here, currently operating at a power of 300 kilowatts. The transmitter type is called Bob 2, manufactured by the Comintern Company in Leningrad, USSR. This type of transmitter was developed in the early 1950s. In 1965, designers carried out modernization to increase the power output. To support broadcast orders, two similar transmitters are in operation. The Bob 2 transmitter has a cooling system using cooling towers and a cooling spray pool. Such a system is now found quite rarely at transmission centers. In the same building, Grom-type transmitters with an output power of 100 kilowatts are located. This model of transmitter dates from 1963. Modernization took place in 1968. The transmitters operate with fixed antenna systems. Broadcasting is possible in the following directions: to America, Europe, Africa, the Far and Middle East, Southeast Asia, and Australia. During the Soviet era, until 1988, the radio center was used to jam Western radio stations. Transmitters such as Molniya, which is 15 kilowatts, and Purga, 100 kilowatts, were turned on for radio suppression. These transmitters were produced at the Krasnoyarsk TV factory, which no longer exists. The jamming transmitters have still been preserved and are in working condition. If necessary, they can be used for broadcasting purposes. Building number two. The legendary Soviet shortwave transmitters of the Condor type are installed here. This type of transmitter began to be introduced at broadcasting facilities in the USSR in 1976. The power of individual units reached 2,000 kilowatts. This transmitter combines the best technical solutions of Soviet engineers. Condor is the latest Soviet global development for high-power shortwave radio broadcasting over long distances using two signal hops. At the radio station in Neratus, the Condor-type transmitter has a power of 1,000 kilowatts. It has not been used since 2014. It is under conservation. Also, in the technical building number two, there's a medium-wave transmitter of the Priliv type. The first models were manufactured at the Comintern Research and Production Association in 1975. This one operates at frequencies 864 kilohertz and 1350 kilohertz in the evenings. First, it begins broadcasting at 864 kilohertz using an antenna with a circular radiation pattern, then switches to a frequency of 1350 kilohertz medium wave using a square antenna. The main lobe azimuth is 202 degrees. Building number three, there are two medium wave transmitters of the Bore type, developed in 1964, located here. The power of each of them is 1,000 kilowatts. One of them operates at 1377 kilohertz with a directional antenna. The structure consists of six masts at 37 meters high. It was built in 2005 by German specialists. The second transmitter is being mothballed. Previously, it worked at a frequency of 1314 kilohertz with the Bolshaya Zarya antenna, azimuth 195 degrees. Also, long-wave broadcasting was carried out from this building at a frequency of 234 kilohertz. In the early 2000s, the transmitter was rebuilt to operate on medium wave. In building number three, there's an imported Nautil brand transmitter. It operates at 1395 kilohertz with a truss antenna. Power depends on customer requirements, and it can be either 100, 300, or 500 kilowatts. It's worth noting that now in building number three, a new Nautil brand transmitter is being installed to operate at a frequency of 1377 kilohertz. The Soviet tube giant is planned to be kept as a reserve. So let's summarize. The main customers of relay services on medium wave are Transworld Radio. Armenian Public Radio broadcasts on a frequency of 1395 kilohertz for several hours, and there are shortwave broadcasts from the BBC and several other customers. The Radio Transmitting Center in the village of Naratus is a unique transmitting facility. The love of the management and employees of the enterprise allows them to keep the huge radio broadcasting complex in good condition. The potential of the radio center for transmitting equipment is very extensive, and at the moment it's not fully exploited. Perhaps someone will say that Soviet tube transmitters cannot be a source of pride because technology has long since stepped forward. However, years of operation of similar Soviet equipment at the Naratus Radio Center have proven that in terms of reliability, maintainability, and interchangeability of parts, equipment from the USSR is an ideal option. Let the glorious history of the legendary Armenian Radio Center continue. That's the report from Andrei Molokov for Wavescan. And we end Wavescan today with Armenian folk music. Thanks for listening to Wavescan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week on Wavescan, Radio Luxembourg, the early history, part one. Wavescan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, Adventist World Radio relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, the Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.